So we're beginning a new chapter today. So we're reading from the 6th canto, chapter number 18, verses 1 to 6. So we'll read verse number 1. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Prishnestu Patni Savitu. Savitrim Vyaritim Tairim Agnihotram Pashum Somam Chatur Masyam Mahamakan Sri Sukha. Translation. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Prishni, who was the wife of Savita, the fifth of the 12 sons of Aditi, gave birth to three daughters, Savitri, Vyaharti, and Trayi, and the sons named Agnihotra, Pashu, Soma, Chaturmasya, and the five Mahayagyas. Text number 2. O King, Siddhi, who was the wife of Bhaga, the sixth son of Aditi, bore three sons named Mahima, Vibhu, and Prabhu, and one extremely beautiful daughter whose name was Asit. Text number 3 and 4. Data, the seventh son of Aditi, had four wives named Kuhu, Sinivali, Raka, and Anumati. These wives begot four sons named Sayam, Darsha, Prataha, and Purnamasa respectively. The wife of Vidata, the eighth son of Aditi, was named Kriya. In her, Vidata begot the five fire gods named the Purishyas. The wife of Varuna, the ninth son of Aditi, was named Charsani. Bhrigu, the son of Brahma, took birth again in her womb. Text number 5. By the semen of Varuna, the great mystic Valmiki took birth from an anthill. Bhrigu and Valmiki were specific sons of Varuna, whereas Agastya and Vashishta rishis were the common sons of Varuna and Mitra, the tenth son of Aditi. Text number 6.
Reta sachi chatu kumbe urvasya sanidau dhrutam revatya mitra utsargam Aristam Pipalam Vyadat.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Upon seeing Urvashi, the celestial society girl, both Mitra and Varuna discharged semen, which they preserved in an earthen pot. The two sons, Agastya and Vashishta, later appeared from that pot, and they are therefore the common sons of Mitra and Varuna. Mitra begot three sons in the womb of his wife, whose name was Revati. Their names were Utsarga, Arista, and Pipala. Purport. Modern science is trying to generate living entities in test tubes by processing semen. But even long ago, it was possible for semen kept in a pot to develop into a child. Om Agyanate. Seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, particularly Srivas Prabhu. In the year 1973, Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk with some of his disciples. And these were the famous morning walks that Srila Prabhupada would have in Los Angeles, Venice Beach. And there were a series of conversations that took place between Srila Prabhupada, Dr. Singh at that time, now Sarup Damodar Maharaj, and a few other devotees, a few other disciples like Brahmananda Swami and Karandar. They were all walking with Srila Prabhupada. So that time, Dr. Singh mentioned that some scientists are now trying to generate babies out of test tubes. So Srila Prabhupada immediately remarked, test tubes? And then Swarup Damodar Maharaj said that what the scientists are now doing is to take the semen and the ovum and mix it in a test tube in order to generate a living entity. So Srila Prabhupada immediately remarked, oh, they're taking a living entity from a woman, and they're taking something from a woman and something from a man and mixing it in a test tube. So what is new? This is happening every day in a womb. Millions of babies are being born in wombs. So what is so great about it? And Karandar responded that this person has now got a Nobel Prize for this particular scientific discovery. And then Srila Prabhupada started laughing. And he quoted this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Swavid vara hostra kare samstuta parusha pushu. Asses, dogs, camels, they want to glorify other asses, dogs and camels. This is the tendency. So in order to give themselves a very elevated status, they take one particular person and give him an elevated status. So what is it that they have done new? And Brahmananda Swami remarked that actually this person who set up this Nobel Prize, he had invented dynamite. So Nobel was the person who invented dynamite. So Srila Prabhupada immediately remarked that so he has created great misfortune and now he has left behind money to create further misfortune. And a few days later, again in a room conversation, one of the devotees mentioned to Srila Prabhupada that Srila Prabhupada, you had mentioned a few days back that living entities who are normally created in the womb are now created in a test tube. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, I remember that conversation. And then this disciple said, but Prabhupada, this nature is already doing this. So what's so new about it? So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, what to speak about creating a baby? Let them try and create a blade of grass. Even to create a blade of grass would be impossible. Creating a blade of grass means creating from something that they are creating. So what is so great about creating something from what nature is already creating? And then this devotee said that they should actually give the Nobel Prize to the Lord and Mother Nature. And then Srila Prabhupada said, yes, that's what they should do. And then this devotee said, but actually, Srila Prabhupada, they should give this Nobel Prize to you, because you have taken all of us and you have created us into devotees. And then Srila Prabhupada said, in his natural humility, he said, no, I'm a dog. I'm a natural dog. And they don't give prizes to natural dogs. They give it only to artificial dogs. So test tubes. Actually, nowadays, one hardly hears about babies being created in test tubes, because what is the need for creating babies in test tubes now? This was maybe around 30, 40 years back when there was still a sanctity for the marriage system. People would try to get children within marriage. Maybe after 10 years of marriage, they would try to get children and they would not get a child. Then, because of the chastity of the woman, she would want to get a child in her own womb. But because for some medical reason, it was not becoming practical to get a child, then they would have this test tube. But ultimately, we have to understand that this test tube again takes this living entity, takes this products from the man and the woman, and then puts it back into the womb of the woman. It's not that science has been able to create a child from a test tube. That has not happened as yet, that a full-grown child comes out from a test tube. It has to be developed once again in the womb. So this used to happen about 30, 40 years back when there was a need for doing this. But now that there's no sanctity for marriage, if you want a child and you're not able to get the child in marriage through this marriage, then you get divorced going to another marriage. So what's the problem? And then maybe after you get a child, then you come back and get married to this girl once again. Marriages are just so common nowadays. I mean, again and again, like Bhavanand Prabhu was mentioning that there was this particular lady, film actress, who married 8 times Elizabeth Taylor. But what is actually may not be so well known is that she married the same man 3 times. She got married the first time to one person. I don't recollect his name, but he was also a very famous actor. And then she divorced him, and then she got married to somebody else. And then suddenly she realized that, oh, my original husband was better than the second husband. So she got married to him again. And then again she divorced him. And again she got married to 3-4 people. And then again, you know, somehow she had this realization that the first husband is the best husband. So she got married once again to that person. So in the string of 8 marriages, she got married to the same person 3 times. So that's the trend nowadays, that you get married again and again if you are not able to fulfill this basic desire to get a... So there's nothing great that science has actually achieved in terms of having a test tube outside. That's a point that Srila Prabhupada was trying to make, that ultimately you have to go back into the womb of a mother in order to get a child. You cannot be having a child outside. So science, of course, has done so many things which are useful. All of us sitting over here in this room are getting the benefit out of science. Right? This microphone, the lights that are there, air conditioning. This is, of course, the benefits of science. But when one really introspects to find out why was Srila Prabhupada so much emphatic about the contribution of science to society. According to Srila Prabhupada, the scientists are mudas, rascals. And he used to again and again emphasize on this particular point. Now, the scientists, they're rascals. What do they have in it? What concept do they have in their mind? So if really one analyzes, one finds that, yes, there have been substantial advancement in science, but from the perspective of the net benefit that has been received by society, one finds that actually there is a reverse. There is so much of negative situations that have been created. So many problems have been created actually by science. To take a very simple example, we remember when we were in school, we used to learn about how this money came to be created, the advent of money. Like about 500 or 600 years back, or maybe earlier, maybe 800-900 years back, there was no real thing as money. We had this barter system where a person who would manufacture a particular thing, he would give it to another person who would manufacture something else, and they would exchange it among themselves. They would have a fair price that would be, not price, but fair value that would be determined for each of the items that they would manufacture. And that is how life was going on, and everything was happening so nicely. But then came money, you know, which had a backing of gold, because gold was a commodity which was recognized as having value, even in those days. So there used to be people who would get gold, just like what our Yamuna Kinara does. People who have more gold, get it, keep it, and then lend out to those who had less gold. And that's how the economy would take place. And that's how the banks came into existence. Actually, the term bank comes from the word bunk, which means bench. Because in those days, transactions would be taking place on a bench. Yeah, people would sit on a bench, and then they would get this gold, that they would receive this gold from people who had gold extra and give it out to people who had no gold that way. So the word bank has come from there. And for about 100, 150 years, this was what was the practice that was followed. And then they found that because of various factors, we won't go into the details, that although the quantity of gold was limited, they had to issue some currency notes, which was more than the value of gold that was available, particularly because of inflation and so on. And that is how they started issuing currency notes. And during the Second World War, of course, this whole concept of currency notes, one realized how stupid it was. Because in Germany, at the time when Germany was completely defeated, annihilated, so to say, In order to keep the economy running, they were just printing and printing and printing notes to such an extent that they were printing notes of 100 million marks, 1,000 million marks, and 10 billion marks, and so on. It's unheard of. And with those sort of currency, you would just get one loaf of bread or, a kilo of sugar is all that you would get for 10 million marks, you know, or 100 million marks. It was so ridiculous. The whole economy was in a doldrum at that time. And then now, of course, we have the concept of plastic currency, credit cards. So convenient for a person to be carrying credit cards in his pocket rather than carrying so much of cash. But with this, credit cards have come so much of fear that has been created in the hearts of people. If you lose a credit card, and particularly nowadays, banks are so liberal with credit cards, they are ready to give you any amount of credit. So they give you a credit card having a credit limit of approximately 2 to 3 lakhs. And an average well-to-do person has 3 to 4 cards, which he carries in his pocket. So you can imagine that at any point of time, he is carrying about 10 to 12 lakhs in his pocket. Whereas earlier, he would have maybe carried 500 or 600 rupees. Today, he carries without, he himself doesn't realize this. Because if his pocket were to be robbed, and if he is not in a situation where he can reach out to this credit card company to inform them that the credit card has been lost, anybody could misuse those credit cards right up to the extent of the credit limit. It's so easy nowadays. Nowadays, with this credit cards, you could purchase practically anything. You could purchase the airline ticket to New York. You could purchase the most valuable jewelry. You could go into a jewelry shop like any of these big jewelers over here, and you could purchase the most expensive jewelry worth lakhs of rupees with just one credit card. And nowadays, the trend is that they don't even see the identity. Earlier, we had this concept of putting a signature behind the credit card, and they would tally the signatures. Now, even that they don't do. And through the internet, you can go and purchase anything practically now on your credit card. Yeah, so there's no need for you to identify yourself. You can just purchase a credit card. You can purchase anything. So, in a matter of a day or two, a person could literally lose 10 to 12 lakhs of rupees. Yeah, so that's the amount of risk that he is carrying with him when he goes out. Yeah, he feels that he is carrying some credit cards, but actually that's a risk that he is. And today with the advancement of the internet, it's so shocking that you could practically be robbed out of your credit card without even being knowing it. Like when you are doing a particular transaction on the net, if that particular website is not secured enough, then any hacker could hack into your credit card number and get your credit card number. Right? Like yesterday there was a news item in the Economic Times which was saying that there is a particular code which is given on the backside of the credit card which is required in order for you to purchase something on the net. Yeah, it's called a CVV number. So now, if a person gets a credit card and the CVV number, he can do whatever he wants. So now, everybody is telling us that you just erase out that CVV number, memorize it, and you can carry the card wherever you want. Yeah. So no doubt, advancement in technology and advancement in science has given us a lot of these benefits in terms of getting a credit card. But what are the risks involved? Huge risk. And these credit card companies, they charge anything between 3 to 3.5% per month. We were thinking that this sort of interest rates are only charged by these money lenders. But if you are defaulting on your credit card, the credit card company charges you anywhere between 3 to 3.5% per month as an interest rate. Yeah, so you can imagine, before you realize it, in a few months you could be just bankrupt. So this is technology that, is so scary that, you don't know what could be happening to you next. And similarly, in terms of medicine, I remember there was a doctor who was telling me, this was a few years back, I don't think the situation has changed dramatically now, but he was saying that when a patient goes to the doctor, at least minimum 40% of the time or 40% of the cases, the doctor doesn't have a clue what is wrong with you. Absolutely. He doesn't have a clue. Right? 40%. Maybe it's 60% now. With the advancement in technology, like it happened to our godbrother, Nityakrishna Prabhu. For the first 3 days he was admitted to the hospital, the doctors didn't know what was wrong with him. So can you imagine this most sophisticated diagnostic tool called the MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, which is supposed to be state of the art, top of the line medical equipment available today anywhere in the world, and very few hospitals can afford it because it costs crores and crores of rupees. And this particular equipment is supposed to reveal what is there within your body very, very clearly. Yeah. And just a scan costs about 10 to 15,000 rupees. It's called MRI scan. Now, Nityakrishna Prabhu, when he went through this MRI scan for the first time, doctors could not make out what was wrong. And within 3 days, they had to repeat this MRI scan. In between, he went for two or three more CT scans. So, we have all the possible equipment, but then ultimately it's all depends on the doctor. If he is able to analyze your particular illness, what is wrong with you, then you have the chance for some corrective medical treatment that is being given to you in time. Because what is more important is that you get timely medical treatment. Not that there are these doctors who keep on experimenting with this medicine, that medicine to see whether it works or not. And then finally, when the real medicine comes to you, you're dead. And the doctor give all sorts of explanations that, you know, what to do. Ultimately, they also say, you know, God is in control. They don't say Krishna, but they say God is in control. What can we do? His time span is already over. And we know all that. You don't have to tell us all that, that a person, when he comes into this material world, he comes with a specific time span. Right? And he's expected to remember Krishna at the time of death. That's what we would be telling him. But then he says, what can I do? We tried our level best. Yeah. So advancement in technology, advancement in medicine has certainly so many, you know, diagnostic. But ultimately, Krishna is in control. Yeah. We have to remember that. When we go to the hospital, Krishna is in control. Absolutely. I mean, he's in control all the time. Yeah, but particularly when we go to the hospital, really Krishna is in control. And we don't know what is going to happen to us. Are we really going to come out? In what sort of condition we are going to come out? Yeah, we may come out, but then what sort of a condition we may come out? Are we going to become a patient for life? Or worse, are we going to become a vegetable for life? Is there any assurance? Yeah. But 80, 100 years back, people would live up to a ripe old age, 85, 90, 95, absolutely no problem. And that time there was no such medical technology, there were no MRI scans, CT scans, and so on. But people were living healthy lives. They were so active. Primarily, our problems are arising because we are inactive. We are not adequately moving our bodies. Yeah. If you really analyze, why is it that these people who were living about two or three generations earlier, why is it that they were so healthy? Primarily because they were active. Yeah. 40 years back, you know, there was no such thing as a mixer, for example. And people, when they would grind rice or dal or whatever, they would have to do it by hand. And that motion itself is much more than the yoga that we do in our brahmachari ashram every day. It gives complete movement for the body. Or drawing water, for example, when you're drawing water from the well. Yeah, who sees a well nowadays? We don't even see a well. The well that we have in our compound is also covered. We don't even know that water used to come out of wells at one point of time. And every day in the morning, I remember when I was small, we used to remove water every day from the well. And that activity itself is giving you so much of strength. Or bicycles, cycling gives you so much. And nowadays, people have to specially create time in order to cycle. You have a non-moving cycle that is kept in your backyard or in your room, and then you sit on that and then you move around for about 15 minutes. People would move in cycle and get their work done also. Now you sit in a cycle, but then you don't get any work done. You just exercise your limbs, that's all, but otherwise there's no work done. So it's ridiculous what is happening, that you are not moving your body enough, and half the diseases are because of that. Even 100 years back, cancer was something that was so rare. But nowadays, it's very clearly said that when you go for an MRI or you go for a CT scan, the risk of you developing cancer is so great, and particularly there's one type of CT scan which has just come into the market now to detect a particular type of tumor. I was just reading an article that day that the CT scan came into the market and then they had to withdraw it because the danger of this particular CT scan causing cancer is 1,000 times a normal CT scan. And primarily, if a young person goes through this, if an old person, because the time frame for you to develop cancer from this is normally around 20 years. So if a young person goes for a CT scan on this particular machine, guaranteed he will get cancer. If he's old, then by the natural course of events, he would die before he gets cancer. But a young person would definitely get cancer, 100% guaranteed. So the doctors at that time would just feel the pulse and determine whether what is your illness. And of course, we are all going back now to 100 years back, and we are going to doctors who are feeling our pulses and telling us what sort of diseases we have in our body rather than go to a CT scan and a MRI. Right? So reverse technology is taking place now. So medicine, of course, is a boon to mankind, but big questions are there as to whether in the long run this really is of use to you or not. I want to talk about some of the allopathic medicines that we take. They are known to be causing so many problems, right? And particularly some of the tablets are known to be causing liver problems. Right? And the doctor, when he gives you, like for example, this nimusolide is a nice, you know, this so-called nice tablet. Why don't you take nice? You know, people would say, I mean, just about a few years back, nice would be just dispensed across the counter and people would take it as if they were eating chewing gum or something like that. And this particular nice tablet is known to cause damage to your liver. Right? And worldwide, this tablet is banned. It's only in India and some of the so-called developing countries that these tablets are still sold across the shelf. And people, most of the people are not aware. They are given this. Most doctors in rural, in our villages, prescribe these tablets just across the table without even maybe knowing what are the dangers of this tablet. And what to talk about so many other medicines that are there in the market which are prescribed and sold across in the counter. Tablets like D-Cold and so many of these cold tablets particularly. Although we have been told, and this science themselves have discovered, that there's no cure for cold. There's no cure. If you get a cold, you just have to live through it. It takes you about 6 to 7 days and it just leaves your body after 6 to 7 days. But then in spite of that, because we want to go out for our work or we want to do whatever activities we are doing, we take these tablets which are actually so detrimental to our health. And of course, how can we forget this contribution of science to technology, so-called computers? I remember when I had joined Siemens about 20 years back, we had our computer was practically half the size of this temple hall. It was kept in a room as big as this half the size of this temple hall and completely air-conditioned. And the moment you go near this, it will generate so much of heat. It's just 20 years back. And they had this huge disk that would store data. And then you had to put, most of you may not even have seen it. Most of you are just in the age of laptops and desktops, palm tops, right? But we have seen 20 years back, huge computers, huge machines, which by today's standard are basically storage boxes. You can just keep some, you know, your whatever files or something inside. Not magnetic files, but actual files. That's the sort of cabinets. Those are the sort of cabinets, and huge cabinets, and they would generate so much of heat and so much of sound that they had to be kept in a far-off place, removed away from where you're working.
And there had to be operators who would be manning the machine, and you know, it would regularly break down. 20 years back. But today we have laptops which are so advanced that practically you can carry so much of data along with you when you go about. Right? But along with all this has also come the internet, pornography, computer games. Today, the computer games have evolved to such an extent, it is unbelievable. Earlier, we would be talking about computer games like solitaire, yeah, ping pong balls falling, and then you had to, or some bricks falling. Yeah. This was the games that we played with. But today, the games are so big, and they are so real life-like, and they occupy so much of space. There are some games which require a hard disk of 300 GB. Can you believe? 300 GB hard disk is required for one game. Yeah? And there are multiple people who can be playing on it. Yeah, you put it on a server, and there are multiple people who can connect onto it, and they are. And this is what is happening in the offices. Like yesterday itself, I was reading an article. So interesting. 40% of the time that a person spends in the office today, I mean, they have calculated this, is on the computer, out of which 50%, that means almost 20% of the time that a person spends in the office is used in emails and games. And not company emails, personal emails. Yeah. So theoretically, a person can just log on to the internet and play whatever games he wants. And then they'll have multiple people logging onto that game. So you have this chat rooms and you have this game rooms and all that where people can log in and play these games. And particularly for a child to be playing these games is so traumatic for his mind. Particularly these games are so violent nowadays. Yeah. And a lot of parents don't even know that their children are playing these games. Because invariably the husband and wife would be working outside, earning their livelihood so that they can provide better and better facilities for the child, not knowing what the child is doing. On an average, an American boy spends between 6 to 8 hours alternating between TV and computers. 6 to 8 hours. A day. Yeah. That energy, that time that he should be actually playing outdoors. Yeah. We are so fortunate. 20 years back when we were children, there was no television. Maybe just television had come into India and there was only one channel, Doordarshan. Yeah, and most of the televisions were black and white because hardly anybody could afford color televisions, right? And who would want to watch a black and white? You can't relate to that particular object that is moving about on the television, right? So children would not watch television; they would go out and play. But nowadays, with 100 plus channels, all giving different exotic activities, movies, sports, dramas, music. So contaminating. And children, and particularly, they are at such an impressionable age. So this is technology which no doubt science has evolved. Like Gaur Gopal Prabhu was saying that nowadays it's not the day of test tube but YouTube. Now, YouTube is a concept that I myself, who am relatively well-versed with current day's technology, I'm hearing it for the first time. YouTube. It's apparently a tube. It's a website. It's a website where people can just load in videos. You can just go into that website and load your own videos. And you can see other people's videos also. Right? You load your videos, you can see other people's videos. So there's constant activity going on, people doing so many different things. And of course, what to talk about, there are websites which are basically created on illusion. Yeah, there are websites called a Second Life. And you go into those websites, you become a member of that website, and there are currencies in that particular website. And you pay real currency in order to purchase currency in that particular website. Like, for example, I don't know what that currency called. but it's got a particular terminology. So you pay $1 and then you get 250 of that currency. And with that currency, you can go into that website and you can purchase so many different things, like you can purchase land in that particular website. It's all illusory. You're buying illusory land. You're going to, in that particular website, you go into and then you have lunch in an illusory restaurant. And then you pay a bill with that particular currency. Right? You trade in an illusory stock market. So much of illusion. And people are so much engrossed in this particular website. There are now about half a dozen websites like that. This is just one example. Second Life. You're supposed to be having a second life in that particular website. So you are an individual. So you can decide what sort of an individual you want to be. Right? Tall, dark, handsome. Yeah, an ugly fellow can become very handsome on that website. Yeah, he can be, like Shah Rukh Khan or Aishwarya Rai. He can be somebody like that. You know, so all the fantasies that a person has in his mind can be brought out on that website, and you are given the liberty to design yourself the way you want. And the value of that particular this is keeping on appreciating. Earlier, the currency rate was something like 290 or 295, and now it's become 250. So in a short while, it'll become $1 is equal to $1 over there, and so on. That means you actually spend money in order to fantasize. Yeah. And transportation, yeah, bullock carts has now given way to high-speed cars. Aeroplanes are contributing so much to global warming. We don't even realize. We think that global warming is a phenomenon that is created only here. But actually, a very, very substantial cause of global warming are the aeroplanes. Because they are going about 35,000 feet above the ground in an area which is actually where the ozone layer is present. And the carbon dioxide that is coming out from the exhaust of these aeroplanes are just depleting the ozone layer like anything. And today, at any point of time, there are some airports where every alternate second there is a plane either taking off or landing. Yeah, Frankfurt Airport or John F. K. Airport in New York. The big airports. That means, if you take the total number of aircrafts all over the world, you'll realize that practically every second there are maybe 10 to 15 aircrafts taking off or landing somewhere in some part of the world. Yeah. Of course, the scientists would like to claim that traveling by air is the safest mode of transport available, which is true in one sense, because the ratio of accidents that are there in aircrafts are much, much less as compared to going out on a road. It's safer to travel by air than to travel by road today. For those who can afford it, of course. But what are the consequences of this huge amount of pollution that is being created by these airlines today? And of course, we have evolved into so many different things like trying to visit the outer space. But ultimately, Krishna is in control. Even here we can see. Like recently, there was a case of this space craft called Challenger, which took off Colombia. And just as it was going up, a small piece of ice came and hit it. And the amount of damage that the small piece of ice did to this aircraft or the spacecraft, so severe that for 7 days the spacecraft was outside orbiting and the NASA scientists were trying to figure out how they could repair this. Because that small piece of ice had gone inside, had made a big hole into the spacecraft. When the spacecraft comes back to Earth, the temperatures outside the craft are apparently around 3000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's fantastic heat. The aircraft has to be tremendously insulated in order to protect it from the heat when it is landing. So the scientist was so much concerned, because there were about 7 or 8 astronauts who were there on that particular spacecraft. And if that particular spacecraft was not adequately protected, then it would just explode when it is landing back into this planet. Srila Prabhupada, when he was there on this planet, and that was a time when these moon landings were so famous. Practically every year there was one Apollo that was taking off and landing on the moon. And Srila Prabhupada was very clear in his mind that the moon landings never took place. And we all know about this beautiful pastime where one of his disciples, they were all watching this on television, and then Srila Prabhupada was saying that it's all bogus. They never went to the moon. And then this disciple became very disturbed, and then he left the movement. And today we are finding that actually, yes, it could be very well true that they didn't actually go to the moon. There's so much of evidence that has been created to substantiate by a different set of scientists. There's one set of scientists who sent the men to the moon, and the second set of scientists are now trying to prove that they never went to the moon at all. So there are scientists who are fighting among themselves now. What you said was bogus, what I'm saying is true. And there are so many photographs that are now being published on the net to prove this particular point, that man actually never went to the moon. All along Srila Prabhupada has been saying this. If only they had referred to the Bhagavatam, they would have realized that there was no question of anybody having gone to the moon. It's not possible. And now they are planning to go to Mars. So it's all a big, big hoax that is put forward on the people. So science also has got this particular ability to be able to convince you that what they are doing is right. The scientists have this particular ability to convince us. Yes. And now there is so much of theories that are going about on the World Trade Center, on this aircrafts hitting the World Trade Center, what actually happened. There's so much of analysis, and it's all so believable that actually the World Trade Center did not collapse on account of this aircraft hitting it, but it collapsed on account of an implosion that was created within the World Trade Center. Right? So you had the World Trade Center which just collapsed like a pack of cards. There are so many buildings that have been hit by aircrafts, but nothing has happened to them. The buildings are still standing today. Maybe a particular floor or two has got burnt by fire. But for such a huge building, 100-storied building, to just come down like a pack of cards, not one building, two buildings. When I saw this particular presentation, even I was very much impressed. I said, yes, it's quite possible that this whole thing has been created. And the reasons why it has been created, Jaidit Maharaj made such a wonderful presentation a few months back with a PowerPoint presentation to show us work of demoniac people. Demons who don't have any qualms. 3,000 people died in the World Trade Center. Right, 3,000 people. And what is the theory that is being put forward today? A diabolical plan that was hatched by a few demoniac people who had absolutely no qualms about killing. And it was a plan by which the people who hatched it could become unbelievably wealthy. Control over some of the largest oil reserves in the world. This was the reason why it was being done. And because they could not do it the normal way, because America is a very democratic country, you have to get the permission of the people in order to do, if you want to wage a war against any other country, you have to get the mandate of the people. So the whole thing was created to prove that this was done by a set of people who maybe didn't have any connection with it, so that the Americans could say, yes, these are the people who did it, now we can wage a war against them. And then you go with full, all the might of your defense armies in order to crush. And what is happening in this country today, a small country like Iraq, it's so pathetic. Every day, hundreds of people are dying out in the streets. Suicide bombings. And for all that you know, at least this is my speculation, that all this has been properly packaged together. It's all being done under the control of a particular person or set of persons. Yeah. Because suicide bombings also cannot happen with such regular frequency like it's happening today in Iraq. Thousands of people are dying. So when Srila Prabhupada would refer to all the scientists as rascals and mudas, of course he had a vision in his mind that ultimately all this would happen because of so-called modern science. So many demoniac activities would be happening because of so-called modern science. People literally can hold countries to ransom, kill millions of people without a single feeling of remorse. So science is good, definitely, provided it is being used in the way it is meant to be used. That's why Srila Prabhupada would emphasize on simple living and high thinking. Forget about all this. That is what is so highly appreciated about the Brahmachari Ashram over here. Just do away with technology if it is not required. Yeah, we don't need it. Laptops and mobiles and iPods and so on. Minimum thing could be utilized, but beyond that, if you don't have to use it, discard it. And go back to simple living and high thinking. The new Vrindavan community was set up only for this purpose, actually. In the heart of America, the heart of capitalism, the heart of scientific advancement, you have a community like New Vrindavan, where people are just living and, you know, in bullock carts, traveling from one place to another in bullock carts, horses, no lights practically for some years. Even today, there are communities in Hungary, simple living, high thinking, living in a farm community, so happy, so blissful. So it is possible for us to, if we understand what is happening nowadays, then you really want to go back into the roots. You want to go back and be part of nature. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. It's already getting late. So we'll stop here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai. Srila Prabhupada ki chai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki chai.